Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Get in on all the sports action and your chance to win up to 100 times your cash with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal Radio.
End it! End it! End it! Yes!
Yeah!
Rog, Devo, Scotland... Beautiful Scotland, my heart breaks for you.
Oh, so many penalty shootouts, Rod, from the Men in Blazers studios in the crap part of Bedford and the crap part of Culver City, California. It's Men in Blazers, do it live!
Oh, it's penalty shootout season. It seems like we can't watch a game without it ending. I don't know, some of them are so crap, they should have just gone straight to the penalty shootouts, David.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is our weekly podcast in which we do it live. For those of you GFOPs joining here on Spotify Live, start asking your questions in the chat right now. We'll pull you up on stage later in the show to hear from you. For those of you listening to this on a delay, if you don't do it live, do you even Lundstrom? The only way to actually participate in the pod is to join us here on Spotify Live. Can we get a twist? Roque Lior.
We can, and I'm going to talk. Oh, let me open this. My first bud of the day. And I want to open it to another penalty shootout. I want to raise this to Nottingham Forest, a team who were bottom of the championship with just 4 points from their first eight games when Steve Cooper was appointed back in September. They are now on their way to Wembley, 90 minutes and one win away from a return to the top flight for the first time in 23 years after 20-year-old Congolese goalkeeper Bryce Samba made three truly incredible mind control gamey saves in a penalty shootout of wonder. Manager Steve Cooper said post game that to win a playoff semi final, you have to do a bit of everything. You need to play well and you need to suffer. And Forest fans have done plenty of the latter. Few supporter groups deserve joy more than them. Propelled, it should be noted, by an American CEO, the quite brilliant Dane Murphy of Reading, Connecticut. There will be a lot of very hungover Forest fans walking around the world today. Savor every second. To you, to your team. Courage.
Rog, also this morning, news broke that the US Soccer Federation and the men's and women's national teams had reached an agreement at last on separate collective bargaining agreements to achieve equal pay on identical economic terms for both teams. This included not just an equal split of bonuses earned through the 2022 and 2023 World Cups, but also ratified equality and performance-based bonuses and the move towards a pay-for-play model in the women's leagues. As your friend Midge Purr said, Rog, it is a moment that finally creates that one nation, one team ideology that these amazing women have been chasing for many years.
A truly historic day for football in the United States. I hope a historic day for football around the world, because this is pathfinding. The US women and men's teams will receive the same financial reward for representing our nation through that equal pay structure. And what's groundbreaking is the agreement to pool World Cup prize money. No other country's ever done this. It'll be fascinating to see how many now follow. I do hope that a page can now be turned, and I tweeted this, on a six-year battle that has stained the game in our nation. It truly, truly has. And you know, I tweeted that and a couple of keyboard warriors, because there's a lot of people that do love to crap on this kind of news. There's a lot of humans who love reveling in misery. and said that was quite a hyperbolic statement. I want to be clear, it's not hyperbolic. If you talk to sponsors who are supporting the US teams, this has been a massive, massive problem for the game, for both teams. It's caused existential pain on both sides. And I did, you quoted Midge. I loved opening up the New York Times today and reading her quote that there's going to be a lot of girls who are going to grow up and see what we've accomplished and recognize their value instead of having to fight to see it themselves. And I love that spirit. I truly do. I'm sure there's going to be questions in this green room. Pop them in the chat. Producer J-Dubs will bring you up to the stage and we will talk more about it. But top line, well done to both parties, you know, for the women, for the fight, for the men, for the way they have ultimately handled the negotiation. I'm looking forward to speaking to Tyler Adams, who was on the leadership group for the gents on our next edition of his podcast. But they've truly turned an open wound for the Federation into a leadership role for the Federation, and I hope a true pathfinding opportunity.
Rog, I'll go, you know, take a step to the side and go a little bit further as well. I sat today with a major female sports broadcaster who has nothing to do with soccer. She doesn't cover soccer. And she was making the point of the effect that this has, comparing it to Billie Jean King and, you know, the beginning of the 70s, that the effect this has on women's sport and society in general that goes way beyond soccer around the world. You know, there's too much inequality across sport after sport after sport. Even tennis, where Billie Jean King did so much work so many years ago, there's still terrible disparities in prize money at tournaments all over the world. So, bravo. I'm so happy that this is finally resolved.
I'd say one other note is I'm bloody elated that part of the understory here is that NWSL has risen to the extent, and it's still got so much more growing, so much more development, so much more possibility, but it's going to such a level that the players feel confident they can earn a living by playing club football and that they're not utterly dependent on international contracts. And so they see a future which is like the men's game, where the real income comes from club game internationally. In the past, it's really been about if you are a member of the US women's national team, you will get a contract that gives you a real salary, and everybody else is, you know, fighting and often doing second jobs. But it is about the growth of the NWSL that's propelled this. So congratulations to them too.
Absolutely, Rog. Okay. The game we just witnessed. Wow, the drama. Rangers 1, Frankfurt 1 after a stalemated first half. The Europa League final burst into life when Joe Aribo pounced on a two-time mistake to open the scoring. 12 minutes later, a cross from Eintracht's Flip Kostic found his teammate Boré at the back post to level the scoring and send it to extra time. And though neither team really looked like they were playing for penalties, that's exactly where it went. It was Raphael Boré again, stepped up for the final Eintracht penalty and scored it. Great finish for the German side after Kevin Trapp earlier had saved Aaron Ramsey's attempt. Eintracht Frankfurt are Europa League champions, Roger.
Oh, the Adler! Yeah! I mean, what a festival of football we have witnessed watching, really, Seville become a Star Wars cantina packed with 150,000 Frankfurt and Glasgow Rangers fans who came.
Should have been in Baku, Rod. Should have been in Baku.
I know. It's so funny. I thought that. Why are they not in a proper footballing place like Azerbaijan? What's wrong with UEFA? Why are they not? Why are they leaving money on the table? They could have, like, taken it to Tajikistan or many other places, but no, they chose Seville and that beautiful stadium, that humid football night. And the football, you know, there was delirious energy. These fans have just drunk themselves stupid in a largely, I hope, I mean, reports started to flicker out of trouble between some of the ultras and the Glasgow groups, Glasgow fans who'd had a few. But I mean, the scenes have been absolutely joyous in the main. I loved every second. And as a game, I'd say it didn't really live up to the prelude. You know, as a sandwich, you had the three days of drinking and the penalty shootout, but the middle part of the sandwich, you had your football slightly less. So, you know, for long spells in the first half, all I could think of was that after a day on the lash in Seville, Dave, the amount of sunburns on the return flights to the United Kingdom are going to be staggering, right?
Yeah, it must have been amazing. I'm pretty sure Rangers must have won the 3-day drinking in regular time. That was not that never had to go to extra time or to penalties. But yeah,
I mean, every Rangers fan looks like they could win the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. They're just absolutely proper.
Even the
proper
kids. Yeah.
Yes. I love them. I love each and every one of them. And it's been wonderful. Honestly, for me, that has been the joy of this Rangers journey. We'll discuss. The journey has been unbelievable. And they had their moment. The edge was to Frankfurt in the game. It was really the CONCACAF of Euro finals, if we're being honest. But Frankfurt had the edge. Thrilling Frankfurt fans and Celtic fans probably even more. Then out of nothing, Rangers struck. Ball flung forward. Frankfurt seemed to have it under control. Joe Aribo charging on, mocked by Tuta, the Brazilian defender who just, I don't know how to describe, would you say he Phil Jones to the floor?
Yeah, I think he tooted at this point. He's weebles wobble, but they then fall down. It was a bizarre fall. We saw some bizarre trips and falls on this surface, but yeah, it was a bizarre fall.
I honestly think he was actually possibly even drunker than the Rangers fans. it was a yakety-yak moment, and Aribo, God bless, 25-year-old Nigerian international from South London, who ground his way up from Staines Town, Staines Massive, fired low and true, 1-0. And my God, German football. This is the culture shock, by the way, for the young Americans that go over there. Tuta brutally substituted immediately by his coach. Just absolutely eviscerated. Yeah. Frankfurt found their way back. Rangers defenders static in their own way, self-sabotaging in their own way as Boré prodded home. And the game went into really a fatigue. It was like the end stages of an ultra marathon in that heat. Like watching, we've laughed at it before, those Japanese game shows from the 80s, David, where they torture contestants.
Yeah, yes, endurance.
Contestants drink gallons of water while riding a donkey without pissing their pants. That's what it looked like watching this football game.
I'd be happy to see them do something like that rather than go to penalties at the end of extra time, Rog. But it was
get on your donkeys.
I mean, this is the problem often with European finals is that everybody is so exhausted by the end of the season. And it's been an exhausting season for Rangers, not only their run to the final, but up there north of the border, with Celtic pipping them to the Scottish Premier League title. These players, I really feel for them. I feel for their fans.
The highlight, really, of the rest of the game was watching young American James Sands of Rye, New York. Shout out to Rye, New York. Zip code 10580. It's my wife's hometown. Possibly its finest sporting moment since BJ Serhoff came on as a centre-back in the Europa League final. It's incredible that a kid from Westchester was trying on. In that day, there was a fine Kevin Trapp, last second point-blank save at the feet. Which is really a true moment of wonderful football. And penalties, this was such high stakes. We're going to remember this penalty shootout. One club was going to be transformed with an influx of millions via Champions League qualification. The other, not so much. And it was cruel, but it was a stunning set of kicks from both teams. Should have really, why make them play football? Just do the penalties. Yeah. Skip the 120 minutes of ISIL football. Aaron Ramsey, Dave, of course. God, what worst loan move of all time?
Yeah, it hasn't really worked out. And this will be this will be tough for him to take at the end. And you could just see on the run-ups, he just did have the most hesitant run-up of any of the penalty takers. He looked a bit slow. He looked a bit indecisive. And, credit to the goalie, saved it.
You can take the boy out of Arsenal, etc. And that was that. I will say, and you can hear Martin Scorsese in the background.
He agrees with all the points.
He's a Rangers fan. He's a little upset. I am gutted for Rangers. Historic run. Generational memories made. Huge love to Frankfurt. Massive club. Win their first European trophy in 42 years. All hail the Adler, Dave. And I'm gutted. Gutted for the blue and white army.
Absolutely. This isn't all the football that's been going on this midweek, Rog. We've had some Premier League action too, and what a finish we've got coming up over the next few days. Looming, that's tomorrow. We've got a bunch of games, including your Everton Sunday, a bunch of games coming the final day of the season. The final relegation spot is still up for grabs. Tottenham, now in pole position for fourth place after Arsenal's insipid loss to Newcastle Monday. And the big one, Rog, Liverpool take City to the final day thanks to a 2-1 comeback win over Southampton yesterday.
We got ourselves a title race. Liverpool, a goal down. against Southampton. And down the stretch, when you're running on fumes, like all these teams are, all you need is love, belief, a deep squad, 9 changes from the weekend, and a little luck. Taki Minamino fired the first one and heralded role player.
Taki lad.
FA Cup, top scorer for Liverpool. Carabao Cup, top scorer for Liverpool. 10 goals in 9 starts. I mean, a player that doesn't... take, you know, an hour before Liverpool fans in telling the story of the season will get to Taki lad. But what a finish when they needed him. And the winner, off scraps, off Walker Peters, off Martip. Second goal in a couple of league games for him. Liverpool, one unexpected hero after another. They keep on keeping on. A point separates them and City going into the final. They bring it on. And it's incredible. Liverpool, 61 games since August. 2 games left to play. The 2 biggest trophies in club football remain a caress and an opponent's mistake away. It's possible, was Jurgen Klopp's message after this one, Dave. Is it possible?
It is still possible. You can't argue with the Möglichkeit, or is that probability or possibility? I don't even know anymore. But it is definitely possible.
And then the race for fourth, Arsenal, it's also still possible. I mean, after the defeat, shocking defeat, it's just a shattering defeat, a dispiriting defeat, awful to watch, even for neutrals who are not Spurs fans.
The ups and downs of this season for Arsenal, Rog.
Yeah, this is the reality. I mean, the jokes, Arsenal, are you Spursy in disguise? They will not qualify for the Champions League for a 5th straight season in all probability after saving their worst to last, really, in an abject defeat up in Newcastle. Xhaka called the team ballless. I mean, it's a squad stretched to the bare bones by injury. Their January transfer window, or really the lack of one, haunts them. The thinness of the squad was glaring. It was an accident waiting to happen. As a neutral, I admire so much what they're building. I would not be down. If I was an Arsenal fan, I'd remind myself what my goals were, what my belief was at the beginning of the season. I think I'd also look at what their salary total is. I think it's 5th biggest in the Premier League. They will likely come 5th. I did speak to my mate, Michael Cohen, who said, depleted squad, nowhere near good enough for top 4, if we're honest. Would have taken 5th all day at the beginning of the season, but only hurts, and my God, it hurts, because it's Spurs. And Everton are next on Sunday at Chris Roney, 0 GFOP, asked, can we call Everton versus Arsenal the Despairico? I think that's an incredible bloody name. I will say this, Tottenham play Norwich. That's the thing. They play the most abject team, the worst team there were. We've talked a lot in football this season. Arsenal fans, this is for you, for me. We've talked a lot about history seeps through in key moments to propel great teams. With Real Madrid, their history is one of epic victory after epic victory in key moments. Just Real Madrid say, we are winners. We will win this. And their opponents are like, oh my God, we're playing Real Madrid. They are winners. We will lose this. Tottenham, they are like the bizarro Real Madrid. They are Real in reverse. Theirs is a history of chronic failure. I'll just put it out there into the universe. Davo, what could be a more chronic failure than failing to get the single point you need at the worst team in the league who are already relegated? It's on.
It would be. And yet there's something about the way that this Tottenham team have finished under Antonio Conte this season, how fueled they are. It just doesn't feel or look very Spursy for now. It doesn't feel like their history. He's such a different manager for this team. And, you know, credit to them. But you know what? As we've said all along, the Premier League scriptwriters are leaving everything till the end. They're giving us the Sunday we've dreamed of for years with lots going on. And who knows what's going to happen on Sunday.
Delia Smith is a cook, the owner of Norwich, and I know many Arsenal fans who are baying for her to whip up a batch of dodgy botulism-filled lasagne. If you don't know what we're talking about, Americans, just Google Lasagna Gate and Tottenham. God bless. I wouldn't wish that on anyone, but that is the mind of an Arsenal fan right now. We are going to avoid talking about Everton Football Club. I will say...
Oh, we are? Oh, I was looking forward to asking
you. I will say I am absolutely and utterly crapping myself. I can see... I mean, this is a dark... I'm shocked at how dark these feelings are right now. The emotions that I'm feeling. We are not avoiding Everton, I believe, in the question. So I'm going to pause. Let's get to those, Devo. And if Everton happens to come up, I will be honest about the darkness. There's so much brilliant football as we come down to the stretch of the Premier League season. But if you're a Premier League neutral who wants a little bit of that title race excitement, check out Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can get in on the action and win up to 100 times your cash. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across our nation, including California, Texas, and Georgia. You just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. You can also mix and match players from several leagues across the globe, as well as other sports like basketball and hockey. That's right, Prize Picks. Essentially a utopia where polysport action can live and breathe. I'm talking Washington Caps, Everton, and Chicago Bulls action all at once in the face. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham Fortress, known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, some for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favorites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend. Have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage.
Okay, Rog, with that, let's get to the Q&A portion of the show. I can't wait. Fire in your Everton questions. We're going to call you up onto the stage, invite you to speak when you move to the stage. Please just remember, stay muted until we call on you. And a reminder to everyone listening, the only way you can ask a question is to actually join us here on Spotify Live. Roger, who is up first?
Oh, I think it is. It is. Let's start with the great Reese Goldshed. Reese, remind us where you are and tell us.
My friends, Reese Goldshed, long time, from Davidson, North Carolina.
Aye.
I've now been to Davidson, North Carolina. I can picture the town.
And Devo, I hope your trip here was successful.
Did you not see Reese when you were down there, you bastard?
I didn't see Reese when I was down there. I did see a professor at Davidson who's another GFOP. I had a lovely cup of coffee at one of the coffee shops there. Went to the bookshop down on that little main drag, Reese. I loved it. Charming place. Nice town you've got there in Davidson, North Carolina.
As I've said before, it's a fantastic place to live, work, and shop. And that bookstore is where I got Roger's book.
Oh, there you go.
Reese, I love you. I really do. Reese, I'm going to come down to Davidson. We are going to raise a bud together. Tell us, what is your question?
Well, fellas, like a lot of Chelsea fans, I am just on pins and needles for all of this drama to be behind us. I'm assuming that the UK government will approve the sale. And once it's done, then there's got to be the turning the ship back towards the business of football. And I'm wondering, Are any real players going to be looking at us in the transfer window with all this drama behind us? Or are the better players going to be kind of waiting to see what happens with a storied franchise like Chelsea because of everything that's gone on? I personally fear it's going to be a terrible transfer window for us. We're seeing a lot of guys go out the door. I'm already missing Antonio Rudiger. Asby's going to be gone. There's talk of Pulisic going to Italy. What's going to happen to Chelsea during the transfer window once all the drama's done, fellas?
Well, look, first, in terms of this deal closings, I know there's been a few comments made in the press by some sources saying, you know, that, you know, Roman's not playing ball at the end of this deal. The UK government don't know if they can get this deal over the line. Let's not forget the role of Rain, the investment bank, the New York investment bank, who only collect their massive transaction fees In the sort of 5% to 10% range of this, you can do your own math yourselves on the billions of dollars of deal that this is worth. They are very, very motivated to get this deal done. I'm not sure I put a lot of faith in the UK government, but in the motivation of investment bankers to reap enormous fees, I'd put quite a lot of faith in that. So
do you think when rain clears the deal, do you think they ring a bell in the office and then put on "It's Raining Men" by the way?
Yeah, that's fine. Let's hope so.
It's Raining Men! Hallelujah! Yeah. Just money flutters.
I can't stand the rain. They put on that. They do all of them. Ooh, I hear laughter. And, yeah, they do all of the rain songs. They play the whole playlist.
I thought they were about this whole time. We thought they were about how innocent we were. We thought they were about the melancholy drops that fall from the sky. It's about money, bro, and that's what you said. Oh, this is about
shock.
Money.
What a shock. What a shock.
This deal is about money. It has to be ratified. It has to be ratified by June the 8th. That's the pressure at the Premier League AGM. The stakes are quite high. If it's not ratified, Chelsea essentially fall apart as an entity. So there's a lot of leverage and a lot of negotiation and a lot of, like, seeing who will blink, but you are fairly confident there'll be a lot of blinking going on very soon.
Yeah, I am. And then on the player thing, weirdly, money has something to do with players too. I think if it gets ratified, Chelsea have money. They have very motivated owners who want to do some things. It does appear that there are some players who want out or some players who maybe Chelsea, they're starting to age out. I'm not sure whether or not they still want them. Obviously, you know, Rudiger going is heartbreaking for all Chelsea fans. He's been sensational over the last couple of years. But yeah, players will come in. Chelsea will always find a way to do business. They've got players on loan who they can bring back in and some very good players. You know, obviously Conor Gallagher is somebody who's been written a lot about. So there'll be new people. Is this going to be the same Chelsea under Roman Abramovich when he was willing to lose so much money? Great article in The Athletic today, Rog, about, you know, why so many people were offering so much money to buy Chelsea and what is the actual opportunity. And really lots of views on both sides. One feeling that it may be an undervalued asset because it hasn't been run like a genuine business. And others thinking there's just no way, unless they become a selling club, there's no way that this makes any sense for any kind of private equity company. Burley is, and you know, Clear Lake Capital, I think that's the name of the company. They apparently have a 10-plus-year horizon on this deal, which is longer than most US private equity firms. We'll see how much money they want to put in, but I think there will be transfers. But I don't expect Chelsea to operate on the same level as they've been in the last few years. And I think we just got to get used to the new reality, whatever it is.
You know, the Clear Lake Capital is a great name for cancer. Clear Lake Capital. Clear Lake Capital. You know, I think we honestly don't know. There's too many hypotheticals. We have no idea. We can look at what Todd Burley's done with the LA Dodgers and to see his path of ownership, his style of ownership, his understanding about the responsibility of ownership, the level of investment that's needed, the level of elite investment across the board into infrastructure, brand marketing, team, contracts, the deal. I mean, that augurs bloody, bloody well, but don't want to get ahead of ourselves in any way. And at the worst, you can have Pulisic's dad starting up front for you next season, which I think will be quite, quite magnificent in its own way. I do find the fascinating thing, if you're an American owner, you kind of want Pulisic to stay around. And if you are running the club, you know, the clubs have American owners. The infrastructure in the club do love to cater to the American owners. They like to, you know, present news pieces. They like to have interviews with their players on American television. So it looks like, you know, business is being taken care of. So I would not discount the Pulisic issue too bloody quickly, but a lot of hypotheticals. Please God, I'll be raising a bud with you and Davidson Rees, and we will know the truth of how that will pan out. Come on up, Kurt Shepherd. Tell us what's your question and where you are.
Well, I'm calling in from Great Falls, Montana, and I'm sorry, Rog, this is the Everton question.
Oh, Kurt Shepherd. Are you actually an Everton fan, or are you just going to laugh at me?
I am an Everton supporter. Because of you and Clint Dempsey and Tim Howard, I'm an Everton supporter.
I'm just looking up Great Falls while you're asking me this question. I may move there if Everton get relegated. Keep going.
Well, my fear is I had hope for 18 minutes on Sunday, and then the baby giraffe stumbled. And I the darkness is setting in with me as well. And my question is, even though I'd follow Everton in the championship, what Premier League team should I be maybe looking at just in case the darkness occurs so I have a Premier League team to cheer for?
A Premier League sidekick. You know, God, there's a lot of layers in that question, Kurt Shepherd. If they go down, so you're really asking, are Everton going to go down? And I have to say, the performance at the weekend against Brentford was really remarkable. I've talked about it in the podcast, so I don't need to repeat it, but it really has stayed heavy with me. I've been chatting to a lot of my Everton supporting mates, and it's similar for that. We can't shake it. You know, the narrative, the early days under Frank, we were a broken club. He then rallied us from the derby onwards, even though we lost that. We became a fighting club. We had that fighting spirit. And then he returned to Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Gomes, who he hadn't trusted at all up to that point. And I thought it was smart that he hadn't trusted him. He wanted players he knew would fight. And it just felt like a different team against Brentford. It didn't feel like it had that same cohesion. And ultimately, with the two sendings off, the feeling of injustice, and then the Rondon farce and chaos at the end, and that emotional swing from just the joy and the ebullience and the flares and let's get behind. Whenever you're at Goodison Park when I was a kid, if the game was kind of falling away from us, or even if we were just in a stale part of the game where the Goodison Park had gone quiet, someone would always stand up in the stand and just be like, get behind the lads! And everyone would stand up and just the place would go bonkers again. It only took one fan. It was like lighting a match. And just at the end of that game, no matter how much someone would have stood up and said, get behind the lads, there was no feeling that we were just knocked out. The team was a broken club again. It was everything was crap again. And God, the energy just felt like it bled out. It was more than 3 points that we dropped. So we go again. I fear the Arsenal game. I fear having to get 3 points at Arsenal. I fear having to go to Arsenal and say, look, Leeds have to win. Maybe, who knows what Burnley will do tomorrow. But let's say we're in some freakish situ where Burnley need to win and Leeds need to win. I fear the Trinidad and Tobago CONCACAF reality where it's like there's only like a 3% chance that the United States won't qualify for World Cup 2018. Then the goals just fly in that bizarre combination that laid us out on our back. We didn't even see the punch coming. So I am afraid. You know, I'm speaking to a lot of my mates. My mate Scott, the Blue, that I talk about a lot, lives in LA, who travel with Everton all over England as a kid growing up. He told me he's not even able to watch the game physically, mentally, can't do it. He said, I'm just going to go for a run during the game, run like 14, 16 miles, and then come home and just look at the website as if it's a hand of blackjack. Just give me my card. Just rip the Band-Aid off. Just tell me, do we live? Do we die? I'm dreading tomorrow. It's like I'm having some kind of procedure that I have to go through that I'm dreading. It's eating me up. To be honest, Kurt, it's eating me up 24/7. Like, I'm aware of it the whole time. And I'm aware that I'm aware of it. I'm like, why am I so down? Saying to my wife, and then I remember why I am mentally down. I feel really low. And it's not just about football. It is about memory. It's about loss. It's a feeling of deep sadness for the city of Liverpool, which has two lungs, the Everton and Liverpool. And what will happen if we do? I can't even say the words. So those are all prologues to your question. If they go down, do you have to find a new team? I can't do that. That's all I can say. It's like, it doesn't work. The idea of finding a sidekick. I'm fond of many teams. Honestly, when I listen to the pods back, I do try and see the good in, you know, there were days early on I talk about Chelsea in the John Terry era, evil always wins and all that stuff. I don't feel like that really. I was trying to think about teams I really despise. And there's things I don't love about football. I don't love the nation states. I don't love, you know, the oligarch investment, the oil money. I don't love the ownership for super football reasons. I don't love the Super League. I don't love Qatar. But I think listening to the podcast, you know, I have become more and more positive about the human moments in football. And I think that's what I'll root for. I'll root for more moments, Kurt, like Christian Eriksen rebound. We got him coming on the television show this weekend. He's my player of the year, and I got to spend some time with him. And we made a really beautiful piece. I hope you find it a beautiful. That to me is why I watch football. For Yarmolenko, running onto the field 10 days after the invasion of Ukraine, you know, after he'd gone on leave, got his wife out and his family and got them back from Poland where they'd escaped to, and then weeping after scoring. Ultimately, Kurt, that's why I watch and why I will continue to watch. But it will be, it will be with a heavy dark heart. Dave, you have a more objective take. Who would you advise Kurt pick up as his sidekick?
Well, I would actually say my objective take is I don't think you have to, unless the sorting hat actually speaks to you and gives you someone. I have a sidekick, which is Crystal Palace, because I, you know, very close to the owner and grew up in that part of London. And, you know, that would be somebody I'd follow in the Premier League if Chelsea go down, which could happen in the future. Who knows? They might not be in business. They might not even exist in a couple of weeks' time. But I would say you don't have to. Enjoy the championship. Enjoy the journey. It's all real. Think, you know, Leeds fans, Norwich fans, Fulham fans. Think what these people have been through and what they go through. So I don't think you've got to leave. I think you stay with your team. Rog, I do want to give you some positivity, though. You know, I always do look at the betting markets, because the betting markets are where people are actually putting their money where their mouth is. It's not just their fears. It's not just their hopes. They're actually putting their money. Everton are heavy favourites against Palace tomorrow at home. In terms of the relegation odds, it's Leeds who are 11-8 on, Burnley at 8-5, Everton 7-1 outsiders to go down. So certainly the neutrals. Oh, you're going to put money on Everton to go down at 7-1. Well, look, if you really think it's going to happen and you want to feel better, go and take 100 quid and put it on thing. At least you have 700 quid at the end of the night to sort of
think about. Why would I just put 100 quid on it? That's a great
put
idea.
Put your house on it.
Love. Vanessa, I've done something quite brilliant.
But the neutrals and the people who are betting. or maybe both. So I think that it's... I feel that Everton are in a fairly good position. We'll see. I don't want to live in a world where we're podding next year with Everton in the championship. There's part of me that also fears that, because I know you so well, that when Everton do avoid relegation, I know that we're going to spend the entire off-season and the whole of next season worrying about relegation again, because now it's been conjured so alive for you. And I feel like we'll never get back from this moment. I think it'll always be there. It's like a scar in a relationship that you'll never get through. But I think for now they're safe. I feel very positive about it.
Makes one of us.
Well, I just appreciate how beautifully spoken and how optimistic you are, even in the darkness.
You're a beautiful human being for saying that. God help both of us in every way, Kurt Shepherd, you beautiful human being. Let's bring up. We're going to take a couple more before we get through the night. Colleen Dempsey, come and be with us. Tell us where you are and what's your question.
Hi, guys. Pleasure to be back. I am here in Troy, New York, home of Uncle Sam, right outside of Albany, New York.
Hey, God bless. A beautiful part of the country.
Yes, absolutely. Real quick, just want to give you a shout out for the Women's Game podcast. That first episode was awesome. It was like so cool to listen to how unapologetically competitive and like growing up as a kid, I didn't hear that a lot. And so I'm like really pumped that other little girls now get to see somebody who's just so, this is who I am. I'm going to be competitive. I'm not going to make myself smaller. And that was so cool. So just wanted to say that.
You are amazing. And thank you for telling me that. And I'll just say that tomorrow's episode, which launches early tomorrow morning, is with Nadia Nadim. And she is even more, even more competitive than any human being I've ever spoken to. And I can't wait for you to hear that. It's a beautiful, beautiful episode.
I love it. I can't wait. Awesome. Well, I mean, that kind of segues into my question, to take us back to the CBA, you know, awesome, accomplishment by everyone involved. Do you think this opens the door in other federations to get these CBAs done and try to get women paid more? Thanks, guys.
Are you talking about other sports leagues in America or other nations following the America's lead in football?
I was feeling more on the national level. You know, obviously the Scandinavian countries have done a lot to help try to promote equal pay within their federations, but we still have a lot of federations. I feel like they have a long way to go with that aspect of it. I know it's more unique too in the sense that other federations don't have the backing of the history that the U.S. women do. Obviously their success was really what was able to push that over the line. Yeah. Whereas these other countries don't necessarily have that. So I'm just curious to see how soon maybe, or if it's possible, you know, within the next decade to see more of these CBAs happening on the federation level in FIFA.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. I mean, look, Rog, before you go, because you're going to have a much more nuanced answer to this, but I think the one thing, sort of going back to some of our earlier conversation, is a lot of this comes down to money, and this isn't necessarily bad news for what's going on in Europe, certainly, in the women's game. You're starting to see the success at Barcelona, full houses watching that amazing women's team. You're seeing the, you know, what Emma Hayes is achieving with that Chelsea team, and not just the, you know, the houses are going to watch that team, but also the television ratings that are starting to happen. And I think that the money is starting to make everyone feel that they just want to see this game get bigger and bigger and bigger. And part of that is seeing these more professionals being paid more and giving better facilities and opportunities to succeed and more incentives. So I feel like it is moving in the right direction. For all the reasons you stated, I think it's going to be harder for it to get to parity in the way that it's got to in the US. But I think it is moving in the right direction faster than certainly I expected.
I mean, it's a massive moment. I don't see any immediate. I mean, the reality is that there's other federations who've beaten the US to equal pay, but the step they've taken with the World Cup, which is deeply complicated, and you know, the pressure, the women have leverage in this in our nation, in that they win, and the men fail to qualify. I mean, The sponsors who circle around the US team, you know, if they want to make content with the US team, they are faced with, you know, do we want to make content with Alex Morgan, Megan Rapinoe? I mean, these are as much as in football can be household names that are recognized by men and women across the United States as much as any footballer ever has been. I'll be honest, it's harder on the men's side. You know, everybody wants to work with Christian Pulisic. His name recognition is sizable in the United States outside of the soccer bubble. But as we've seen on porn stars, it's not massive. There's a vegan. He's, you know, the LeBron James of football. Isn't he in the Messi and Ronaldo ether? It's a confused sense of who. Hopefully, after the 2022 World Cup, please God, a lot more people will truly know. And so, you know, from a sponsor perspective, there's a real pressure, a quiet pressure and off the record pressure to get this done. And I think in other federations, it's one step at a time, which is equal pay first. The World Cup step is bold and it's remarkable. By the way, it's incredible. The men have, and I'm fascinated to speak to more of them about this in the weeks to come to get their sense as they negotiated. On their understanding of the tectonic plate shifting between the two games. But it is partially about the rise of the NWSL here. It's not just an emotional decision that, yes, this, I'd like to think it was like the men saying, yes, this was a just thing to do. We must fight for this too. But other nations do not have the same leagues. The England have that incredible Women's Super League where the quality is fantastic. But a lot of that is already supported by the Premier League teams and the infrastructure there in a really devoted way. So I'd say I'd like to think so. I don't think it will be a major. It's not like a forest fire where this will just flicker around the nation. It's going to be more baby steps. I think the next step for these federations where they control, they're essentially non-profits, these federations, where they control both teams, is to get equal pay across the board. And I hope, you know, ultimately FIFA need to step up and, as Devo hinted earlier in the tennis analogy, and equalise that pay But the women in the Women's World Cup, which is, by the way, come on, leaps and bounds. Anyone who was watching the, you know, since the 2011, the quality of it, the marketing opportunity of it, the eyeballs of it. I mean, we are seeing the tectonic plate shift for Women's World Cup in the most wonderful way. And so I'd say I'm optimistic. I'd like to think. This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
We're going to take these questions super quick. You've been so bloody patient in every regard. So let's take them both. We will start with a great John Sell. So remind us where you are and what's your question.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm coming from New England's rising star of Hartford, Connecticut, home of the U.S. Open Cup participation trophy winners, the Hartford Athletic.
Oh, my word. Yeah. Crushing loss. But it was a to Red Bull, but at least they participated.
Yeah. Very well then. So, you know, coming off an absolutely brilliant Europa League final, I was wondering what both of your most memorable European final moments were, because for me, I was reflecting back to the 2018 Champions League final with Real Madrid over Liverpool, not just because of Bale's heroics in winning the match for them, but it was the first time we were in Europe when that was happening, and we were in Budapest, not even close to where the final was, but just to see the thousands, tens of thousands on people in bars and pubs everywhere witnessing this. And we finally got a seat at getting some doner kebab watching this. And it was just the experience just as much as it was the result in the actual match. So what was your most memorable moments of the European final?
I mean, for me, obviously, Chelsea, you know, have won it twice. And, you know, that was, what was it, 11-12 and in last season. Those were huge moments for me. But I'm going to talk about a game, you know, obviously the Liverpool comeback in Istanbul was amazing. But still, for me, it's that 1999 final, Rog. The Man United comeback against Bayern Munich. Those two goals so late in the game when the game was truly over. That was, I think, the first moment. I was watching at a bar in Los Angeles, and I remember turning to my friend George at the time and saying, this is really the greatest sporting competition on earth. And I still think that Champions League is the greatest. I still think that it is the greatest quality of football. I still think there are more twists in the tail of Champions League than any other thing. And but 1999, and obviously we grew up with some amazing finals in the, you know, the sort of earlier versions of the tournament in the 1980s and the 1970s. But really it's that 99 Champions League comeback by Man United that really still speaks to me.
I mean, for me, I think I prefer not to give you my emotional sense of what I remember, but you know me really well. I always lean on science and objectivity.
So, stats.
Yeah, and stats suggest that the world's answer would be the 1985 European Cup Winners' Cup final, Everton against Rapid Vienna. I mean, just an incredible run, just an incredible Everton team. Everton won titles. They won trophies. They were just, We were league champions. We were headed towards the European Cup, and we won in devastating, emphatic fashion. It was just glorious. Andy Gray, Trevor Stephen, Kevin Sheedy. I loved Kevin Sheedy. Rapid Vienna were just not in the game. And it was a magnificent thing to witness. This team that I loved and that had gone around Europe and been on the same par as Liverpool. That's how, in this dark time of Liverpool, the city, you knew us by our football and our music. And we followed the team all over Europe. Liverpool fans followed Liverpool all over Europe. We stole sports gear from European sports shop after sports shop, got really knee deep into the Lacoste and the LS and the Donnet and all those premium European sports brands. And as a kid, I was like, nothing can stop us now. Of course, tragically, English teams were kicked out of Europe after the true Heysel tragedy within a couple of months. And so the Everton that we dreamed of never was. But as a kid, as a child, that was probably, never mind my favourite European memory, it's probably top five Rog life memory. It was like turning to my dad. We're both crying, just saying nothing can stop us now. God, I love that feeling, and I needed that feeling amidst the darkness. We're going to take one more beautiful question before we leave in this Glasgow Rangers night of mourning. Rangers fans, if you're listening, God bless you. It could always be worse. I was emailing with Arseblog, and I was like, mate, it could be worse. Whatever pain you're feeling, you could be Everton. He's like, you're right, yeah. We're not in your predicament. So this is great for me to have my spirits lifted. Let's bring up Arjun Bidanda. Come be with us. Tell us where you are and how badly I just effed up your name.
Yeah, very good pronunciation, Raj. Coming to you guys from Bethesda, Maryland.
Hey, big, big shout out to the home of Straight Edge Punk in America, that great, great town. What is your question, Arjun? Bring us home.
I think with all of the very high drama storylines in the Premier League this season, I think one has really gone under the radar, much more so than it should have been. What kind of fanfare do you expect on Sunday for Mike Dean?
Dino! Yes, Mike Dean is retiring, for those who don't know. It is a deeply meaningful moment for anyone who loves the work of narcissist essentially, flamboyant narcissist, self-interested, self-involved thespians. Dave, how are you feeling about this retirement?
It's bad for business, for content's sake. We lose one of our true stars of our work. He's one of our muses. He's our referee muse, Rog, and we're working hard to try and find another. Kevin Friend seems to be stepping up to fill the vacuum at the right time, but I'm going to be very sorry to see him go.
I actually tried to get him to come on the Men in Blazers show, and I'm still keeping my fingers crossed that we can make this happen. I want to know what, I'm fond of him in a way that I'm fond of, crazy members of my family. I don't really want to see them at family gatherings, but I'll be sad when they're gone. And I do feel a certain sadness, mostly because he was a staple of the Men in Blazers show. And J-Dub's cut a beautiful video that no doubt will dig out of him giving his like, how many red cards? It was like 200 or something. And we made a film of each one of them. And I do believe that the Premier League need to honour this moment and should probably do a guard of honour where they reunite every single human being who Mike Dean has ever red carded and make them form two lines. And he should enter his last game through a guard of honour of red cards. And they should all hold up a red card to him. And then at the end of the game, they should put him on a large Viking boat, set it on fire and send him off down the river. That's why I'm just coming up with ideas here. That's hard thing to see.
Down the Thames. Yeah, off we go. Up the Thames. I love it.
Up the Thames, up the Wazoo. God love. They should wonder where he's buried. His last, can you imagine how much in about 70 years, if he gives a red card in his final game, that last red card will go for auction at Sotheby's. More than Maradona's shirt, mate. That's how much it will go for. Pull this together for us. This Rangers in mourning, Everton in mourning, Frankfurt in ascendancy, Burnley in ascendancy, Leeds in ascendancy podcast. There you go.
Yeah. Absolutely. We will see. Rog, that brings us to the end, right? Are we out of questions? We're out of time.
I've got to go and pick up my daughter from a football practice. Line that says, that is it for this Spotify Live, Rog.
Yeah. Quick shout out for a new episode of your new pod, The Women's Game, presented by Paramount Plus. It drops tomorrow right here on this very pod feed. Features none other than Racing Louisville's Dr. Nadia Nadim. That's right, Rog. She is a professional footballer and a doctor for reals. Rog, apparently you've got another toast to bring
She is incredible, by the way. One of the single most incredible human beings I've ever been in the presence of. She is just double N is absolutely God. If I had an nth of the belief of that human being, God, if you all listen to that and think about that, if you had an nth of Nadia's belief and action, God, life would be so different. And talking of that podcast, I want to raise this Jägermeister, this exclamation point of human emotion in a shot glass to this weekend's Women's UEFA Champions League final, Barcelona versus Olympic Lyonnais, 1 p.m. Eastern time, live and on demand at our friends at atafootball.com. A clash between two of Europe's great footballing powerhouses. It truly is a fascinating footballing matchup. Barcelona, so well drilled. They know their roles so well. They've been inculcated with the club system and tactics since they were kids. Nadia Nadim actually called them essentially the Spanish national team with a few great wingers added. She said their only weakness is their individual defending because they're so well-oiled, they really don't often get challenged in league play. It is remarkable to watch that team. They can be exposed when isolated one-on-one. And Leon, such a different side, so disciplined, so coiled, so ready to come at you. My God, Godspeed to our friend Lindsay Horan. Godspeed to Kat Macario, just such a lethal exclamation point of a finisher. I don't think, and Nadia said this, Leon don't show Barca the respect, and that will shock Barca. It's going to be the best kind of chaos, and I can't wait. Courage.
Absolutely. War Pig. Vendepunkt. Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Bulls win, Bulls win.
Can't say that anymore. Take that, Gloria.
Bulls lose.
Can't say that either. To Tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, Dave.
Love you, Rog.
Pray for Everton, America. Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.